Hello, friends. This month is a huge celebration for us. Guess what? We are turning one. This July, we're celebrating 1 year of being on the air, aiming to demystify the world of audiovisual and lighting for events and revealing to you everything that's related to event productions, behind the scenes, tricks of the trade, as well as insightful tips, strategies, tactics, and perspectives, which hopefully have helped and will continue to do so to plan and produce successful events of all types, sizes, and formats. In person, virtual, or hybrid. Because as we discussed in our previous episode, virtual events in one capacity or another are here to stay, and we're excited to have the opportunity to share from the front lines our experience so far in producing virtual events. So in order to diversify this experience for you, our audience, and give you a wide range of what it's like to plan events during this season, I decided to do something different this month and invite several event professionals from all parts of the industry with a different stance and perspective to come and talk about their experience with this new reality of planning and producing events. My goal with this is to provide you with as much focused and clear information as possible as you're looking for different ways to transition your events to virtual, all the while creating a successful virtual event experience for your audience and online participants. For over 20 years, Lauren has helped hundreds of organizations become more mission capable, raising millions of dollars for incredible programs. As a former frontline fundraiser, she has been in the trenches cultivating donors while planning lavish events and knows how overwhelming fundraising events can be. Her expertise has helped over 25 organizations pivot quickly to virtual events during the global pandemic. Lauren is passionately engaged with nonprofits to produce fundraising events that weave creativity, storytelling, and best practices. Lauren launched Raise Agent to support, to guide, and champion fundraising doors. Lauren is a graduate of the University of Washington. She first fell in love with event production during a year-long public relations internship at One Reel, where she helped produce amazing community events. She has held positions in event planning, marketing, public relations, and fundraising. Lauren has 2 children and is married to her best friend, Andrew. They love to travel, golf, host parties, and cook for family and friends. Raise Agent is proudly based in Portland, Oregon, and works with clients throughout the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Their highly skilled team raises the bar to help nonprofit events succeed. And I can personally testify to this as I've been working with Lauren and her team on multiple events, and she is such a professional, very detail-oriented, bringing excellence to everything she does. Lauren, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you with me here on the air, and I'm so excited to be having a conversation with you about events, planning, and fundraising, especially in this new and constant changing and evolving landscape of virtual fundraising events. As a highly skilled event professional helping so many nonprofits navigate events and succeed in the last few months, how are you doing? And I must ask, how has the pandemic that's been wreaking havoc among so many small businesses in all industries at large, but especially in the event industry, with the crowd restrictions and all the group gatherings, how has it been impacting you and your business?
Oh, Anca, it's so great to join you. Thank you for inviting me to do this. You know how much I just think of you and your talent. So thank you so much for including me in this discussion. Wow, it has been an interesting 100 days, I would say, hasn't it?
There's a thing as I have a friend and she's Chinese and she celebrates the 100 days after having a child. So it almost feels like that, like if you can make it 100 days, then you've made it. You're good. Right? You're healthy. You're going to thrive.
Oh, I love it. Well, I think we've been surviving. Hopefully we'll now start thriving, right? It's been
Absolutely.
Such, like you said, this ever-changing landscape that we're in has been something else. But what I have actually really appreciated is just all the solutions that we've been able to come up with so quickly, and working with, you know, you and your team and other vendors that we work with, how we've been able to come together to find solutions to these challenges for our clients. It's not a landscape that we all are familiar with, but there's a lot that we are familiar with. So, you know, having the ability as just event planners to be able to think quickly on our feet right out of the gate, we've been able to come up with some really good solutions for our clients. But it has been, you know, interesting just to see how it's evolved in the last 100 days as well, from where we were in the middle of March to where we are now, almost at the end of June.
Yes. I mean, it feels like it's been a year just since beginning of March, and it hasn't, but in so many ways, I know that you and your team have been working so hard behind the scenes and making sure that so many nonprofits are aware of the option of pivoting and transitioning to virtual events as a way to still be able to raise funds and survive and make it this year, because 2020 is obviously nothing like we imagined it would be in the beginning of the year.
No, it's not. Who knew that in the middle of the year we'd be at this place? It's been very interesting just to see too how quickly and how with just so much brave folks out there take this leap into virtual, because I know for a lot of organizations, it's been very scary. And I do applaud them for even taking those steps so we could help guide them. But it now in the fall is just now planning events that are completely virtual. And we know that instead of just being reactionary, like we have in the last, you know, 100 days of having to get people quickly switched over.
Yes. And the reality of going virtual or some sort of a hybrid combination of, or at least there is a hope that there might be something like that happening in the fall. At least people now, they have an idea. We paved the way, right? I mean, the first event that we transitioned, it was the first to just go as a fundraising event, 100% go virtual and still be able to raise so good. And I think you know which one I'm referring to, but it was such a fast transition. And I was so amazed at the fact that when we had this conversation, I mean, a few days prior to the actual event happening, you ran with it and you're like, you know what? We're going to make it happen. Yeah. And you are so pivotal in that transition. And I know it, probably even now you get thank you cards.
Yeah. At the time, I didn't think much about it, you know, to be honest. I was like, yep, we got to do it. We got to switch these folks over and we've got to do it right now. I didn't even pause to get scared of the risk. I just went for it and knew, you know, we were in good hands with your team and the results were tremendous.
That's so good to hear that and just know that it's like that leap of faith when you jump into the waters and you're like, okay, I don't know if I can swim, but... Here we are. Here's the current. We're going to have to fight it as we go. And it was actually a really good experience. It's an example that I use a lot in my podcast as well, as you know what? Sometimes even if you don't have the whole way paved and all the details nailed, you can still go and have an amazing event working with the right people and working with the right professionals. And you kind of nailed the nail on the head with being an event planner that is so used to changing and adapting constantly. This transition really was just another level of adapting to something that you knew you're gonna get comfortable to, but in that very moment, you just had to make the plunge.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, you just, there's no playbook, right? And we just
we're still writing it, right?
I know, we're still writing it, exactly.
So in your experience with the last few, I think it's like actually more than a few, it's like 20 something, 30 nonprofits that you've been able to work and transition to a virtual event, fundraising event, what has been, in your opinion, the main struggle when working on those pivots, on those transitions?
Yeah, I think the biggest struggle has been, it's a new landscape. People don't understand how these virtual events come together, the pieces that are needed to put something like this together. So many organizations we've worked with kind of used to how we do an in-person event. How do you do a gala? There's a certain best practice, I'll say, for that. And for this virtual event, I think the biggest struggle has been just explaining to folks how much brevity is important, clear instructions, not handholding your clients or your donors, but really making it very easy, no barrier to entry for folks to be able to watch the live streams, these virtual events.
Yes.
If it's an auction component, you know, how to bid, how to participate, how to donate, really being very clear and concise in all your messaging. So I think that's been the biggest struggle. It shifted from being something where they had a good thing going in terms of, you know, their annual event, and they knew how they needed to do it.
Like the only challenge being Googling the address and getting to the door. And then from there, you can be inside.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Well, you've been doing a fantastic job at helping and guiding and navigating a lot of those details with your clients. And I'm saying this just from the event producer of the tech, because having someone so detail-oriented and so particular on those details, it's such a help for us on the other side, where we depend on those clear details just as much as the audience trying to log in or figure out, how many tabs do I need? How do I go from this live cast to the bidding site, and where do I press to be able to donate, and things like that. The same way for us, having that clear script that gives us instructions, what happens next and who's next and all those elements of a virtual event. It's like you're producing a show that before was a type of an event that you'd only see on TV. It's like, oh, I'm watching a TV show and I'm not thinking much of all the details because I'm just lounging here, entertaining myself for the evening. A virtual event in so many ways, it took a lot of focused information, and now you have to deliver it in a way that the audience is still engaged and you don't lose that audience. So on that, what has been some of the tips that you can give to other event professionals out there that are doing the same thing that we've been doing as far as engaging the audience and keeping them and captivating them?
That's a great question. You know, it really starts with the content in terms of putting together that run of show and figuring out, okay, I've got an hour to do this or 30 minutes, depending on what it is. The content is so important. So what are the key messaging points that you want to convey right out of the gate, what your organization does, the impact that they make on the community? So I think having the messaging be very concise and clear and inspiring is really important. I want people to know exactly why they're tuning in. And then, you know, hopefully with the rest of the content that, you know, comes their way, they continue to keep watching. And we have seen people, you know, doing that. I think that also the engagement piece that's really important is utilizing the chat interactive feature that you can have on these live streams. That has been really important in terms of just celebrating the people that are watching and tuning in and from different locations all over the world sometimes, and being able to celebrate, you know, donors as they're giving real time. So people are really feeling like there's a connection point to these events. Yes. It's not that they're just watching, but they're really participating.
Absolutely. So important. And I've seen quite a few virtual events in the last few months. And you can definitely see the difference between an audience that's engaged and celebrates the nonprofit and the donors that are participating with their funds and their actions. It's been so good to see that even in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of everyone struggling one way or another, people can still come together and they can still make a difference.
Absolutely. So true. And it's been really inspiring to see that.
Now, as far as virtual events and best practices, because I mean, we're event planners and we love best practices, right?
Yeah.
What would you say would be best practice for limiting some of the risk that would be involved with live streaming the day of the event?
Yeah, I would say, you know, your technology is the biggest investment you can make in a live stream. That piece, I think, above everything else, you know, it's not about the food or the venue like it has been for some of these groups in the past. It's the technology. So making sure that not only do you have the right equipment that you need, but you're testing it, you're making sure you have the bandwidth, you know, all those pieces.
Yes.
Because the worst thing that can happen with these virtual events is that you can't do it because of, you know, technical issues. That hasn't happened so far. We've been working with some great people that are very well versed in this, but I think that would be the biggest piece. Is just make the investment in technology when you're looking at your budget and when you're hiring your AV team.
having the right partners. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And just making sure, you know, they understand too and are well-versed in just the different platforms that are needed and how, you know, the different feeds work and all that.
I definitely agree. I mean, I do have some amazing partners that I love to work with, and having that team behind you that can support your needs is 100% what's going to carry you through a successful event from a technical point of view, because you can plan the most amazing event, but if you don't have the technology to back that up, especially nowadays when we rely so much on tech and on being able to web stream properly and being able to have the bandwidth necessary to create the kind of experience that people don't just get frustrated over, because yeah, you need to just drop a few times and you're like, I'm done. This is not working out for me, right? It's definitely been a, like you said, writing the book even for us, for the behind the scenes people. Mm-hmm. And learning as we go, even as this is not the first time that we've done virtual events, although mm-hmm. we don't call them that, right? It's right. definitely been a lot of webcasting happening yeah. in the event landscape, even before when in-person events were happening at on a large scale. So here's another question. This is a trick question for you, and it's okay if you don't have the answer, but what would you say would be a type of event that maybe live webcasting shouldn't be an option for them?
Oh, sure. You know, I always, when we start talking to groups, we always ask questions, you know, what are your goals with this? I think for folks that don't have an auction component for the fundraising side, mm-hmm. they can still do, you know, and ask for donations. But if they don't really have the content that's going to engage and inspire people, then maybe, you know, an email campaign or peer-to-peer fundraising mm-hmm. is a better option. So we have had many people contact us and ask, you know, hey, we want to do a virtual event, we're ready to go. And then just through talking to them, it doesn't make sense all the time. So we want to make sure that people think that through, that they want to make sure it's not detrimental to their organization, because you flop and it doesn't work, you've got this in perpetuity, right? So, you know, just making sure that it's the right move is really important, and what's the overall goal and concept is essential.
And I love how we also took on the role of educators in this yeah. new space. Yeah, I mean, it's yeah. so true, because I can certainly recall quite a few conversations of that nature that I'm having, not on a daily basis, but often enough to be able to pinpoint the event that is so much better off if they decide to do something like a trivia game, engaging game, amazing idea over yeah. Zoom with your audience, that you don't need to take it at a different level, especially mm-hmm. in the context, like you mentioned, you don't have any silent auction or live auction component, any fundraising component. Nobody is going to stop you from making a fun event. But I feel like a lot of people, sometimes they just need that definition of what exactly is what you guys are doing versus what I think I need to be doing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I know that you love analytics as well. Have you been able to see, as far as the events that you've produced so far in the virtual realm, any analytics regarding a platform that performs better than another platform?
That's a good question. I think for the groups that we've worked with, primarily have either done, you know, an embedded stream in someone's website, or we've, you know, YouTube Live or Facebook Live. Those are sort of the three main platforms that we're using with groups. I would say there's some tricky things with Facebook, and some of the things that come up are, you know, if someone hasn't made their event or live stream public and access it, you know, and then having the recording of that afterwards, downloading it can be a little bit tricky from yes. Facebook if you want to use it in other places. Another piece is just copyright music. People want to use music in these live streams, and Facebook and YouTube, they'll flag those.
Yes.
Shut down your stream, which could be very unfortunate. So also thinking through that piece, I'm a big fan of having it be a dedicated URL that yeah. is on the organization's website. And then it can be, you know, simulcasted out to other places. That's my preference.
And as well can be customized to their yeah. need, right? So like if you have different sponsors mm-hmm. and different levels, then you can make it look exactly how the rest of your fundraising event page looks like.
Exactly. It's more branded to you. Yes.
Exactly. I agree with that. I know that as far as analytics go, some people say that we've definitely seen a spike in viewers on platforms like, for example, YouTube, from the perspective of people being able to pull YouTube up on their screens, especially on their smart TVs at home, with much ease than going to a web browser and inputting the address. But that doesn't necessarily make it the easiest as far as customization goes.
Right. Yes, I would agree with that. We had one group that we worked with, and the night of, we did it on Facebook Live, and they had 250 like solid viewers, you know, throughout. After it was all said and done, the next day there had been 1,000 views, and then now, you know, almost 2 months later, there's been 4,000 views.
So it only goes up, exactly. Like you said, it's going to be there for ever and ever, and for the good or bad of that. I have another question for you as far as format, because you've worked with so many nonprofits right now. And as far as programming goes for a fundraising event, do you have tips? How long should it be? What is the format that would be best to be followed, or any advice in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. We found that about 45 minutes to 1 hour, 60 minutes is the ideal time for an event, virtual event. And then right out of the gate in the first 15 minutes, you make the ask for donations. We don't want to wait too far into the event where we've lost people and viewership has dropped off. On all the events that we've done, 8 virtual full production events. And those we found there's a 26 minute average watch time. And most people are dropping off. If it goes past 45 minutes, they're dropping off at that 50 to 55 minute mark. So, you know, really keeping it to 1 hour, keeping it very concise. I think for a group that has donations that they're making an ask for, and then they're also having an auction that they're promoting. If it's just an appeal, it can be 30 minutes to 40 minutes. You know, we don't want to bog people down. We want to be cognizant of people's time and provide really good content that's going to inspire folks to give. If there isn't any more to do there, you don't need to go any further and drag it out.
Yes. And in that regard, any advice that you might have to an organization? I get a little bit of this question asked. Somebody would come and say, well, we have this MC and this president and this person wanting to speak. How would you have them understand that? Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, in a live event, in-person live event, that wasn't necessarily so much of a question of timing, because you have people socializing and eating their dinner. So having the event take up to like an hour and a half, 2-3 hours, it wasn't such a big deal. But now needing to stay within that time frame that you mentioned, like 45 to 60 minutes, you definitely have to be aware of the time that is going to be taken by person A, person B, person C before you even get to the point of the event in the first place.
Yes, I agree with you. I, you know, really want to be able to deliver quality content in a very concise amount of time, not drag it out. And one of the ways that we've been able to manage that is just pre-recording a lot of things. So, you know, if you do have that, you know, executive director, board member, donor, you know, all these different people that, you know, they need to be part of the event, and maybe they do fit into that, pre-recording them is great because you can control the timing of it. One of these that we did, we hit it right on the nose of exactly the timing for 1 hour. All these pre-recorded components, which probably were 3/4 of the event, the virtual event, and then about 15 minutes of that was live. And we were able to, you know, stay right on the hour, which was exciting.
Totally agree with you. It's the advice that I give all the time as well, because then you know that this 1 minute and a half is going to be 1 minute and a half or 3 minutes, not 15 minutes, just in talking points that were definitely not part of the script. Another thing that I would have people asking, well, what if we provide a script and they will stay on script? I'm like, absolutely, that's amazing. But what if they don't? Like, nothing is more embarrassing than having to cut someone off in the middle of their prolonged speech, right?
Absolutely. And also they have some groups in the early stages of this, they wanted to, you know, Zoom people in to these virtual events, Zoom call and whatnot, and connectivity risks of that was just huge. So as much as we can get pre-recorded is great.
Now, in terms of industry trends in this reality, what are you watching out for at the moment for the future of events as we know them in the fall and beginning of 2021?
Yeah. So for us and all the groups we're working with in Portland and then some in Eugene and down south in Oregon, we're finding that those are all going virtual for the fall. So they're not going to have any in-person events happening. What we are looking at is hybrid events and what those might look like, you know, going into the winter and next spring when we can gather groups of more than 25 people. You know, it's going to take a bit, at least in this area, especially in Multnomah County, where we have the majority of our events in Portland, to get to that place where we can gather. So, you know, looking at hybrid events and what that could look like is really exciting in terms of having a virtual component, but also having people on site taking part in that event. I think that's something that we're really exploring and seeing what the possibilities are. Some of it, it's not in our control. It's going to be what the state dictates. At least it's been fun to kind of
explore the idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot depends also from state to state. Like, for example, I'm also doing events in Idaho, and Idaho has been on stage 3, about to start stage 4, as far as all the regulations go for safety and crowd gatherings and openings of restaurants, venues, and all the other businesses. Yet, we are finding ourselves having to backslide to stage 3 instead of going into stage 4, as we were all hoping and rooting for. It's definitely been some changes in numbers and the requirements haven't been met. And now we're looking going back to stage 3. And I know a lot of other states are looking at the same prognosis where they're hoping for the best, but if the numbers don't show it, then there's definitely going to be a more conservative approach to what happens next. Now, as far as hybrid events, in your opinion, I know you're a planner and you always think of different ways of like what would best serve an event, but what would be, in your opinion, the most appropriate format for a event that is considering possibly doing a hybrid event if all the restrictions are lifted and obviously the requirements are met?
Yeah. So having something where you have, I think people are going to be getting used to having a little bit shorter program in terms of these virtual events that we're seeing. So when we go to hybrid events and we're going to have some inclusions where we have in-person and that virtual component, we still have to keep the program pretty tight. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece of it. Making, you know, online bidding, if it auction is a component of that, is going to already be running before an event happens. And so when people arrive, that's already underway and already happening, and you won't need that like hour and a half socialization time that people usually have, that social hour where they also would bid. So making that shorter. So maybe it's more of like a half hour social, then you get seated for dinner, and then the virtual program begins where people are watching it live in the ballroom, but it's also being, you know, streamed out for folks at their homes or wherever they are. But keeping that program really, really tight. So it's going to be, I think we're not going to see the days of like a 3 to 4 hour gala anymore. I think we're going to see shorter, more concise events, which is kind of exciting.
It is. Especially for us that start at 5 a.m. and leave at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
It's been so good talking to you, Lauren. I'm so excited that we had this opportunity to discuss some of the amazing opportunities that do come with virtual events, but also challenges that we're all facing, even though from different vantage points of view, you know, in the industry. Now, if people want to find out more about you and your services and the type of events that you are doing, where are you mostly found on social media?
Yeah. So we're at Raise Agent. So RAISEAGENT on Instagram and Facebook. You can also find us on the web at raiseagent.com. Thank you so much, Anca, for having me. I love talking to you, and you're a great person to solve problems with. So thank you.
Thank you for being such an amazing partner on all those events that we worked on so far, and looking forward to more events that we will work on together. And we'll see what this new reality looks like, even in the hybrid event space.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, friends, this is it for today's episode. I mean, that was a lot of good information, wasn't it? Thank you so much for listening to the very end. Leave us a message or a comment if you found any of this helpful and in which way. We would love to hear from you. Also, what else you are doing as far as events and your business goes, especially if you have new ideas that we haven't covered yet, please do tell us. We would love to hear from you. You can contact us via email podcast@trifanevents.com or via our Instagram account, messaging us directly @trifan_events. Stay safe and healthy until next time, which is gonna be next week with another feature guest. So make sure that you put that in your calendar. We're gonna have another guest on our podcast, and I'm so excited to air that episode out in a week.